Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Zero Ducks Given. Toby Tarrant here and joined as ever by Manchester original star player, the one and only Mr. Stephen Finn, and just 5 years younger than Brad Pitt, Daniel Norcross as well as is here. How are you both chaps? You well, Finny, you good?
Yeah, we can't complain. Got our first win in the competition the other night. Been good fun being up here in Manchester, although it's currently raining, which probably doesn't surprise too many people. But yeah, it's everything's going all right, thank you. Enjoying getting to know the lads, and yeah, just a shame that I've got to spend 45 minutes talking to you two instead of being with them.
Well, it's lovely to see you too, mate. Do you know, genuinely, when the Manchester Originals lost the first game, I thought Finney's found another format that he can lose every week in. It's quite impressive. But you put it to bed in the second game and got a victory under your belt. What's it like? Talk to us. What's life like as a 100 player? Because it's never existed before.
Yeah, it's all right. We're still living under safe living guidance, so it's probably not as fun as it potentially could be were we allowed out to do things and go to restaurants and stuff. But the cricket side of it has been really fun, sort of gelling with a new group of guys and new coach and Simon Katic that I'd only played against before and not played under. So yeah, getting used to your surroundings, and I suppose it's sort of similar to the T20 lifestyle some guys live. You sort of go from environment to environment and gel and try and come together and achieve something. That's sort of where we're at, and it's been really good fun so far. I really enjoyed it.
And the women's team in the same hotel, do you guys hang out together, all the Manchester Originals?
Yeah, we've got a team room. We've when we won the other day, we all had a few drinks in the bar downstairs in an area that we've got for ourselves down there. And yeah, in the team room, the cricket's on every night, so everyone takes their Deliveroos up there and and eats it together in the team room. Yeah, so we're hanging out with those guys, and obviously they're playing the games before us, and we watch their games, and I think they're hanging around and watching ours. So yeah, there's a lot of cohesion.
That's nice. I'm just picturing basically like sick form. I'm just picturing table football. I'm just picturing stuff like that, basically. Daniel Norcross, let's talk about your team, because you have decided you are an Oval Invincibles super fan.
Till I die, mate. Till I die. The Invincible, I've already got the Invincible swagger. It's like the Surrey Strut, only it's like even more invincible. You know, in the words of the great KP, it's good. It's very good. It's very, very good, actually. I found my calling for 4 weeks of the year, and you cut me open. And if you do that, not only will I not die because I'm invincible, but you will find the word invincible sort of blazoned in slightly acid green all the way through the middle of my stomach, which is mostly bile. But
I'd imagine.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Look, they played three games and one got washed out, and they are still invincible. And the women, I tell you, Alice Capsey is something else. I saw her. I got a sneak preview a few weeks back when I did a game for the Surrey live stream, Surrey against Middlesex, and she times a beautiful ball. And then Maddie Villiers hitting that unbelievable six in the first game. And I spoke to a lot of my colleagues with there on the day. Obviously not me, NFI. They don't want some miserable old git to launch 100 with a grey beard. But, you know, right. the young people who pretend to humour me within the TMS team, who were allowed to be on the programme, did affirm that it was an amazing atmosphere that first day. It was really something else. There was a kind of real buzz, and at the time, the biggest domestic audience. And I thought it kicked off really, really well. And I think I'm liking the women's tournament. I'm sorry, Finney, but at the moment I'm liking it just a little bit more, because I guess I'm seeing new players, different players, but also I'm seeing the best quality of domestic women's cricket I've ever seen in my life.
Mm.
Whereas in the men's game, because of COVID, you know, it's nothing to do with the organiser or anything, but, you know, like, Finney's got a game for a start. But, you know, there's that lad who came from absolutely nowhere, who played his first, Chris Benjamin, played his first List A game, his first T20 game, and his first 100 game all in a week. And, you know, ordinarily, I don't think we'd see that in 100 next year, because everybody will be available, but COVID's affected the men's game a little bit more. So, yeah, I've loved it. And I'm not going to wear the kit, though. I've never worn kit, apart from the Manchester United away kit in 1977, which I really liked. I had three straight stripes down the left-hand side, and I had a mad crush on Gordon Hill. But that's for another podcast.
Well, I mean, you're right to mention Alice Capsey, 16 years old, we should mention as well. I mean, a freak of nature. She's absolutely unbelievable. And now, in the weeks leading up to this tournament, because I didn't want to slag off the 100, which I know a lot of cricket purists, in inverted commas, have been doing in the build-up to the tournament. But because Finney was picked and I knew you were working it, I didn't want to sit on this podcast every week and get stuck into it. But I would say I was probably more in the anti-100 camp, for the same reasons that every cricket, in inverted commas, purist is saying, you know, do we need it? Shouldn't they spend more money in the domestic 2020 tournament? You know, test cricket's dying, let's focus on that, blah, 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 blah. And I'm very happy to completely, you know, eat my words that actually I never said. But it's been a brilliant start to the tournament. The organisers, who must have had everything crossed for a decent start to the tournament after the delay of last year and question marks about whether this tournament would actually go ahead. Brilliant first day of the tournament. I just love the fact that it's on terrestrial TV as well for people to watch. I think that is, you know, we talked a lot about how great it was that the England-India Test Series was on Channel 4. But as much as I love Test cricket, I feel like this 100 is far more likely to attract a new audience than watching England getting bowled out for about 90 in a Test match in India. I think this is much more entertaining for people trying to get into the sport. And then I believe that they'll discover Test cricket further down the line. So it's doing its job. And you mentioned it there, you know, I'd probably say, you know, we did discuss this months ago, but it's probably a bigger deal for women's cricket this than men's cricket, you know, and it probably is the biggest domestic women's cricket tournament ever. And it's been amazing to watch it. Let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about Stephen Finn's performance in the 100 so far. You fucking show off, Finney. Diving around like he's Jonty Rhodes in the two games I've watched Finney in so far. He's rolling back the years.
He's a boundary rider. When did he become a boundary rider?
I know.
Sophia Dunkley of the Manchester Originals. He's charging from one place to the other. I mean, it's a frightening sight, actually, because there's so much of him. And he absolutely pelts after it. And on those big boundaries in Manchester, you've got how far? I think I calculated that in 1-5 ball. So it was 1-5 ball. We'll come on to what we're going to call that at some point later in the podcast. But where every ball went to you in the recent game, and they were all sort of like shanked along the ground, and every time you had to run like 30 yards to your right and then 30 yards back. I mean, you basically did a 400 metres in about a minute and a half there, which is pretty good for a man of your age.
What's got into you, Finney?
Yeah, you know, I just thought, trying to better myself the whole time. That's the way I live my life. Just trying to constantly get better at everything that I do. And fielding's the one thing that I've practiced a lot of, you know, with the help of my friends and family. I've just finally managed to get over the hurdle of being a lemon in the field. And now I'm actually useful. Yeah. So it's been nice to throw yourself around and feel young again.
And the relief on your face when you took the catch at short third man as well was betrayed absolutely.
I misjudged that, actually. And it was because it was a off-cutter slower ball and he sliced it. When the ball came down, you could hear it fizzing when it came towards you. So I was just...
I hate that.
And then I misjudged it as well and went reverse cut and caught it around my knees. So, yeah, it was... I nearly fucked it up, but managed to hold on, so it's fine.
That must be a satisfying feeling when you do a good bit of fielding in front of a big crowd like that and you get a nice little cheer. That's got to feel pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're acutely aware of the silence as it goes up, or the roar sort of It goes, oh, and then it goes quiet just before you catch it. And then yeah, either boos or cheers when you either drop or catch it. But luckily, I think I've had two chances this tournament and caught two. So you never know. It might change tomorrow, but we'll see.
How did you feel on discovering that your home team has prepared a magnificent raging turner? And I see you can think about this in two ways, Vinny. One is, brilliant, I'm only going to have to bowl five balls per match. Or two, it's not really the pitch for me. Which way did Finney go when he saw that pitch?
Oh, well, I didn't mind. We won, so I didn't care. Had we lost, I might have had a different opinion. But yeah, and also those wickets that are a bit slow, they suit my style of bowling as well, because you can bowl the ball into the pitch with big square boundaries and use changes of pace and natural variation and stuff like that that you can't probably get away with, or you wouldn't be able. Those skills aren't transferable to a very flat ground with short boundaries. So, yeah, I wasn't too fussed. It just so happened that Matt Parkinson bowled the ball of the century.
He really did.
Handy. Yeah. It was. I didn't realise how far it had spun until we watched the replay, and I was like, Jesus, that had spun a long way.
Yeah.
And the other guys, the other two spinners backed him up. So, yeah, it was an easy night's work. I did five balls.
I thought you and I were stealing a living, Norcross, but five balls, unbelievable, isn't it? You must see a lot of Parkinson in the nets, because I wanted to talk about him, because he's basically having his own, if there's goal of the season in football, he's basically having his own bowl of the season competition with himself this year. He's bowling absolutely seeds at the moment. Does he turn it, Matt, turn it square in the nets as well?
Well, I've not had the pleasure of facing him yet. I just sort of pop into the nets right at the end for some fluffers, as we discussed a few weeks ago. Had some lovely fluffers this afternoon. Actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
came out feeling $1 million. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any unlovely fluffers?
Yes. Yeah, there are. Yeah. Some can be a bit rough and throw the odd bouncer in, which, you know, doesn't go very well in the fluffing world. You just want to be caressed. Had a bit of that this afternoon. It's been all right, but I've not faced him in the nets yet. But just from watching him in the games and how he operates, he's a funny man and he loves just trying to spin the ball miles. So if he gets a few more wickets like that last one, I'm sure he might even beat his ball of the season competition.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. If you haven't seen that delivery, do check it out at some point on social media. Now, Dan, we talked about you being an Oval Invincibles fan a bit earlier on. Now, I've been thinking, because I don't officially have a team yet, And I'm trying to kind of work out who I go for.
What?
Well,
I mean, hang on. You were brought up in Surrey, right?
Yes, I know. I know.
You know, Cobham and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you're not going to go Southern Brave, are you? You're not going to go down the A3. You're not going to do that.
I'll talk you through my working out. So first of all, I thought, do you know what? I should be loyal to our man Stephen Finn, you know? Maybe I should be a Manchester Originals man. But then I thought, you know, Manchester Originals, if the 100 goes on for years and years and years, you know, Finney could get a new contract. He could be at Southern Brave next year.
Yeah.
And then I'm stuck with Manchester Originals and Finney's left me high and dry. I've been hurt too many times.
And you're a Liverpool fan. You're a Liverpool fan. I mean, how on earth can you be a Manchester Originals
exactly.
fan?
Exactly. So that rules Manchester.
Well, we've got a few Scousers in our squad. So, and the women's squad. So, you know, closest team to Liverpool.
Yeah, but he's from Surrey to start with. He's like the absolute...
Yeah, that's irrelevant.
He's the Manchester United paradigm. Actually, thinking about irrelevant. It, that makes it perfect for him.
Well, I haven't decided yet. I'm going to keep seeing how the tournament goes. You guys keep winning, Finney, and then we can talk, mate. London Spirit, I mean, they play at the home of cricket. They play at Lords. They've got Owen Morgan.
The second oldest test ground in London. It's the second oldest test ground in London. I mean, come off it. You've got to be joking me.
Also, you know, and, you know, organisers, you know, take a hint here, but London Spirit have very kindly invited me to the game on Tuesday as well next week.
Oh, I see.
So they're buttering me up a little bit. So they're tempting.
Shambles.
Birmingham's my second home. I went to university there. They've got Moeen Ali. They've got the man of the moment, Liam Livingston, and they've got Imran Tahir's hair, which is very, very important. And they've also got Shefali Verma, who is unbelievable to watch. But then Trent Rockets have got Joe Root, big Samit Patel, and Nat Sivri used to play for my cricket club, Stoke Dablin. So I'm torn at the minute. So basically, I'm going to see who's really good and then go for them, I think, is the plan.
Well, we call the Invincibles for a reason, because we remain invincible. I can't believe, I don't understand why you're resisting the obvious solution. You're a Surrey man. It's just up the road. It's in the oldest test ground in the country. It's beautiful, apart from the kit and the logo, which I can't quite make any sense of, but it doesn't really matter. I can't make sense of any of the logos. If you look at the Southern Brave logo, right, it just looks like a squiggly 53.
You get
it up on your screen. The Southern Brave logo just says 53. And the Welsh Fire logo says LEI. It's really, really strange. So it was the squiggly 53s against LEI today. But I wanted to say something, because you mentioned Liam Livingstone en passant there. And I thought one of the really interesting things about the game I was at, the Originals game that Finney was playing in, when Livingstone came out to bat, he got some terrific boos because he was not playing for the Manchester Originals. And people have said, oh, is anybody going to be at all invested in any of these ideas, these confected notions, you know, Manchester Originals, London Spirit, like what we were talking about? Is anyone from Liverpool going to support Manchester? Well, it turns out that the people who went to Old Trafford were booing because Liam Livingstone had been a Judas and had gone to Birmingham Phoenix, which I thought was pretty brilliant in a way. It's like when Sophie Eccleston walked out to bat on the same day earlier on, there's a really big like cheer when she came out of Manchester Originals. Like the crowd actually knew who she was. And I, like you, have been quite sceptical about the 100 and its value and whether it will work. But those things are working, actually. Those things that I didn't think would work are sort of creeping in. Now, that doesn't mean, incidentally, that I think that this was the right solution or that I approve of its long-term development. I don't know what I think yet, but a lot of the things that we thought wouldn't work are working. You've got to take your hat off them for that. There's quite a lot of being really excited about everything, though. You know, we've just seen the greatest game there's ever been in the history of all humanity in front of the largest crowd you've ever witnessed, as the TV broadcaster has a camera pointing at a mostly empty stand behind them. So, you know, there is a sort of sense out there of hype, which... Yeah. I think he's. I don't know how you feel, Toby. I mean,
no,
Finney can't talk about it, but I mean, I found it a little bit difficult to cope with the hype.
I think it just feels bigger because it's on terrestrial TV. I think that's a huge, huge factor that, you know, those numbers you mentioned earlier, the viewing figures of it, you don't normally get anything close to that for a domestic cricket competition, because
2.5 million were watching one of the games, and that's unbelievable. More of them were watching the international games. So
yeah.
I mean, that's undeniably fantastic.
Yeah,
I just I think there's a mixed. I think what slightly worries me about the 100. I don't know if you've experienced. I don't know if Finney has this as well. But on my Twitter timeline, it's like the culture wars are breaking out within cricket. You've got to be one thing, or you've got to be the other. And if you're not pro the 100, then you're an antediluvian tragic, who is all part of the problem. And if you're pro the 100, then you're like, you wanted to tear things up and you don't care about the fabric of society. And, you know, you're just like, you're just evil and you're crapping on our dreams. And there has to be a more sensible debate than this about it. I'm not even sure we even need to have a debate about it. Why don't we just watch the bloody cricket and in 4 weeks' time decide whether we think it worked or not?
Yeah. I think that's the thing, is once it started, it's cricket, isn't it? I quite like watching bowlers. I quite like watching bowlers bowl at batsmen and them try and score some runs and the bowlers try and take some wickets, basically. And really, apart from, I'd say, England test matches where I am really desperate for England to win and I'd rather they just batted everybody, which doesn't happen much at the moment. With white ball cricket, outside of the major tournaments, the World Cups and the 2020 World Cups, I'm quite happy to see a tight game. Even if England are playing against somebody, I'm quite happy to see a game go down to the wire. I'm not fussed about England necessarily battering everyone. So I think once the game started, I just enjoyed watching a bit of cricket.
Also, can you remember, incidentally, though, because this I think is quite an interesting test. When I first watched the IPL at the beginning of the season, I can never remember who's actually won consecutive games.
No, never, never. I keep seeing the teams come out at the moment in the 100. And I'm like, which one, who have they got again? And then I wait to see who the opening two batsmen are. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's that one. Got you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do want to mention some other performances. What should we go for, the good or the bad? Let's start with the good. let's talk about Marchant de Lange with a fiver, which is ridiculous. You only get 20 balls, five wickets. Finney's going to need about four tournaments to take five wickets at this rate. Unbelievable performance. I mean, Finney, you reckon you got a fiver in you? In you somewhere, mate?
Well, I've got three wickets in the 20 balls that I've bowled so far. So, I mean, if you hadn't been paying attention, they were all high quality wickets as well.
But I wish people could see it now. You cocked your head like Princess Diana when she was talking to Martin Bashir when you said that. I got three wickets and 20 balls. Yeah.
Well, I'm just as elegant, I'll tell you that much. I don't know. Five wickets is a lot of wickets in the space of 20 balls, isn't it? But if you bowl at the correct time or you're on a roll, because the nature of the tournament means that you have to keep going and you have to keep going for the score, there will be some guys that just absolutely clean up. And Marchant de Lange, from what I've seen, has been bowling thunderbolts, has been bowling bloody well. So, Matt Parkinson got 4 for 9 off 18 balls the other night, yeah. I think. I'd have probably backed him to get two more had he been bowling at the lower order batsman as well. So
can I just say, I mean, Marchant de Lange, I had a bit of a debate about this on Twitter. We're trying to work out what he looked like because he's very distinctively magnificent looking, and I think we came up with at the end the one that was most relevant was he looked like the undercover British policeman in a lower low crossed with Lord Lucan having bulked up massively. That is, I think, pretty much where we're at with Marchant de Lange. If you've got any better suggestions,
he's absolute box office, isn't he? He's absolute box office to watch.
He's wonderful.
Yeah, he is. He's super. And it was great to see Colin de Grandhomme in the tournament as well. Great to see that hair again as well. Now, nobody's got 100-100 yet. I'm sure that will happen. But I think that you mentioned it there, Finney, the nature of the game. Although it feels like 20 balls isn't a massive difference, it does feel like you really don't. You have to go from ball one. I mean, we saw Tom Banton track Daniel Briggs and spank him over his head first ball of the game or second ball of the game the other day and hit 2-6 in his first three balls. You just go from ball one. The other thing I want to mention is the less impressive performances. So it was very, very exciting over the weekend. Joe Root and Ben Stokes, the two biggest names in the tournament, took part for the first time in the 100. The organisers would have been licking their lips, salivating at the prospect of England's captain and England's best player going head-to-head. Joe Root, golden duck on his 100 debut, and Ben Stokes dropped Alex Hales. The ball went for 6, and Alex Hales went on to win the game. The forgotten man of English cricket, Alex Hales, in many ways. Finney, when you were playing for England and performing well for the England side, how did you find it when you went back to play for Middlesex? Did you find there was a lot of pressure on you to perform? Did you put a lot of pressure on yourself to perform? Did you feel like the players you were playing against were keen to do well against you because you were an England player? Did it come with a bit of a target on your back? Did it make any difference at all?
I suppose it's different when you're a batter and a bowler. I think if you're a batter, bowlers can come really, really hard at you and just desperately try and get you out all the time. I think that's probably slightly easier for guys. I think as a bowler, it's not quite as easy. People probably took absolute pleasure in spanking me around after I'd played for England, but they did that before and they've done that long since. So it's not something that was just exclusive to playing for England. But I think you do definitely feel an element of responsibility to try and or to win games for your team more and more than you did when you were young. I mean, the advantage that I had was that I was very young when I played for England. So that gave me confidence to come back to county cricket and do well. It's sort of a few things melt into one pot, I suppose. But yeah, you definitely feel the responsibility when you come back from playing for England to your domestic stuff, because guys are looking up to you that you've made it to the next level and you've got to show them why you've been there and what you've been doing and how you've got better. So yeah.
I was going to say, presumably you go away with England working with an unbelievable coaching team. You're bowling in the nets against some of the best batsmen in the world and playing alongside the likes of Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad. Did you find that when you went back to county cricket, you realised that you'd improved dramatically by going away with the England team? Did you feel like you came back a better cricketer than you went out?
Yeah, you certainly do, especially in your more formative years as a cricketer, because your rate of, or your the acceleration of your learning process is so much more when you're around guys like that. But I mean, the thing that made me good when I was that age, I just seemed to keep coming back with 3 or 4 miles an hour of extra pace. I went sort of in the mid-80s, and then for a couple of years, probably until about 2013, I just kept coming back 2 or 3 miles an hour quicker and got myself up to around 90 or 92 miles an hour pretty consistently for a couple of years. So that was probably the thing that separated me, or the thing that made me a better bowler in that time.
But why though? Why? Because I think,
you know, people... I can't put my finger on it. I wish I knew. I wish I knew. I'd be doing all those things now again. But
is that coaching? Or what is that? Or is that access? No. Is that like day to day?
It's just bowling. I think your body grows into your bowling action, I suppose, and you get stronger within your bowling action the more you bowl when you're younger, which is why I'm a big fan of youngsters not like having the pin pulled on them bowling a decent amount of overs, because I certainly think I benefited from it. I mean, some people would probably argue that I've struggled with injuries later in my career as a result of the amount of overs that I bowled when I was younger, but it's sort of a trade-off that I'm quite willing to have made, or a sacrifice I'm willing to have made, because I believe that bowling a fair bit in those early years made me a good bowler and sort of made me the successful, semi-successful international cricketer that I was. So, it's a very fine balance, but it wasn't necessarily going away and being like, right, you have to do this and you have access to better coaches. I don't believe the coaches are that much better or even better at all at England level. They're more facilitators there that help get the best out of you rather than really develop you. I think it's just being around those experienced guys, and also at that stage, my natural development and growing into my bowling action.
Were you a gym goer? Because, I mean, you look at Chris Tremlett and Simon Jones, who are absolutely, absolutely massive. I've always felt, and this is my excuse anyway, but I always felt that the best way to get quick at bowling was by bowling, because you're working all the muscles that you need for your action, for the skill. I always find, I'd never really understood the point of a lot of these bowlers going into gyms and getting absolutely huge. I always thought if you could be quite fit, you know, keep your cardio up and basically bowl a lot, that was normally pretty good for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a balance between the two, isn't there? Because I think if you bowl a lot and you groove bad habits, then that's a bad thing. But if you find functional power-based drills in the gym that can help you, so it's not necessarily getting bigger and getting stronger, I'm not even sure I'd be able to do that, to be quite frank. But I think if you find drills that are powerful and bowling specific in the gym that allow you to strengthen the muscles that you need to bowl quick, then that's something that I've tried to do throughout my entire career. But never have I gone to the gym to try and beef myself up, because I just feel as though my body wouldn't be able to move the same way.
Now, when you were bowling 92 consistently, that's got to feel nice. I mean, I would love to. I mean, obviously, you know, 72.9 is very respectable pace as well. But when you're bowling 92 miles an hour, I mean, you must have been very satisfied when you saw it coming out at those sort of paces. And also, did you like going back to Middlesex and bumping some poor county batsmen with your newfound 92 mile an hour bowling?
You sort of don't notice. It just happens naturally. I think I've never been the sort of bowler who can run in and say, right, today I am going to bowl quick, or today this is the day that I'm going to absolutely steam in and bowl 95 miles an hour. That wasn't the bowler that I was. I relied on rhythm and timing and my long levers to be able to do that. So it was more just for a few years, I managed to find a rhythm and a confidence that allowed me to get to the crease and just let rip. So there are a few days where I was bowling and the speed gun would come up and your looseness at like 89, 90 miles an hour. And you think, oh, this could be fun today. It's not something that I didn't go to the warm up and be like, right, today is a day I'm going to bowl quick, or this, you know, I really feel like this is going to be a quick day. It's just as it happened in the games. If you sort of go with the ebbs and flows of how your body feels and how you feel as well.
What was, I remember now, because you played around with your run up at times, didn't you, in your England career? You had one that was much shorter at one point. And also we've talked about you constantly hitting the bales and falling over as well. Was that all just while you were tampering with things? Why were you making those changes? Do you remember?
Well, they changed the rules, didn't they, for me knocking the stumps. yeah. And I had
Graham
no choice.
Graham Smith did. Yeah, Graham Smith made
that
happen.
I got a bit stitched up there. So yeah, I had to sort of change my run up because I was playing every game in every format at that stage. So I sort of had to try and find a way to get around that problem. And the problem was by shortening my run up and just sort of sprinting towards the middle of the crease, which worked for a series in New Zealand. I bowled really quick in New Zealand for a T20 one day and test match series. But in the long run, it grooved me into bad habits to not use my levers and be short at the crease and mess the timing of my bowling action up, so that by the time I'd realised that, it was too late and everything sort of unravelled, I suppose. And that's when I got sent home from Australia. So, yeah, you've got to be careful when you're tinkering around with things or the fundamentals of your bowling action, because it can take a little while to unpick. And it did for me. It probably took me about, it took me a few months to unpick it, but then to get confidence again took me about 12 months. So, yeah, there's a lot of different caveats to, it's not easy just to change something like that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Mark Wood had a naturally really short run up, but
yeah,
nearly all of his career, and he would start with that kind of leap in, and he picked up injuries and he would fall over a lot. And then a couple of years back, he was encouraged to lengthen his run, and he's bowled the quickest spells of any England bowler. I think he and Harmy are up there, Steve Harmison, as the fastest.
Stephen Finn will have you know that. Finney, I think
have you got a quicker one than you got a fastest, quicker one?
I think I've got three of the top 10 or something like that.
In England ODI cricket. Down. Yeah.
And the top Test 10. Match cricket. Yeah. And yeah. Test match yeah. cricket, yeah.
Or was that with a long run or a short run? Because because in a way, like the Woody example is actually sort of the opposite, isn't it? It's where he has sort of realised that maybe the thing that he has been doing has been contributing to problems. And now, so he's been encouraged to just give yourself a bit more of a run in. Take a proper approach, and it's kind of worked for him. He's found an extra 4 or 5 miles an hour, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's probably found that consistency in pace, I'd say, because it's easier on his body. I think he's always been capable of bowling very quick, but I think that the thing that his long run-up has given him is that easy momentum through the crease, whereas sometimes before it maybe looked a bit forced or looked as though, you know, he was just trying to get it down there or muscle it down there as quick as he could. But now, with the longer run up, he looks as though he's got a smooth flow to the crease, like he really picks up momentum and then everything explodes down towards the target, which is why his pace, I think, is consistently up. So yeah, I changed my run up from that short one to the long one, and you know, you tinker with it a little bit every now and again. So I cut probably 3 meters off it at the beginning of last summer, just because. But my run up would still touch the 30 yard circle in a 1 day game, which, when I shortened it, it was nowhere near. It was probably about halfway.
He is a thing of beauty to watch, Mark Wood, now with that new run-up. I do love watching him bowl live. He's incredible to watch. We've talked about the 100. We talked about Finney's bowling, but let's move on to proper cricket.
Hang on. I'm not gonna let you leave the 100.
Okay.
Until, not just yet, because I've got one thing that's really like bugging me as a commentator. Right?
Okay.
And Finney's done a bit of commentary on this. And when we started, we were like sort of encouraged to think about it as just balls, right? Just balls. Don't think about overs. Overs are dead. There is no such thing as an over. And every commentator started the 100 by trying to do that. And before you knew it, we had sets of five. We had overs. We had blocks of five. Because you can't not. Actually, you can't not, because you keep on changing the bowler. Now, either we bring back overs, which is the obvious thing to say, isn't it? Or we've got to come up with a new word for overs, all right? Now, I put this out again on Twitter, and Chris Addison, the writer of many great things, including The Thick of It and Veep, he suggested fiver. Mm. I thought fiver's fine, but it's a bit prosaic.
And it's a bit close to fifer as well. He took a fifer.
It's a bit close to fifer. Mm. Then I realised that you're like, Cockney rhyming slang for a fiver is a godiva.
Mm.
So you could have a Lady Godiva, right? So you can bowl a Lady Godiva. That's it, and that's your five balls, right?
Bit close to Godiva, though.
It's close to Godiva, yeah. But that's what makes it so lovely.
Okay. Right?
In many ways, because it's like it's got a little nod. It's got a little nod to the past.
Okay.
And then Matt Roller got in touch from Crick Info, and he said that they're calling a 10 ball an Ayrton Senna. Right. If you bowl 10 balls, you bowl an Ayrton, right?
So okay.
So we might have a Lady Godiva and an Ayrton. But then I'm thinking, if we're talking about fivers, then maybe actually we look at like what's on a banknote, and you've got like Winston Churchill on a £5 note, you've got Jane Austen on a £10 note, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you've got like Winston's and Austen's, or Winston's and Jane Austen's, if you want to go the whole way. Because we need gender parity. Gender parity is the whole point of it. You know, so that works beautifully. But then it occurred to me that actually the Lady Godiva is probably the best use for maiden, right? So, because if you bowl a maiden, there haven't been very many in the 100. I think we've had two.
Mm.
But they obviously they're not allowed to, we're not allowed to call them maidens, because what we're trying to do is simplify everything. So you can't use old language.
Right.
But I think that if we could get a Winston as an over, right, as a five ball over,
yeah,
and you could bowl a Lady Godiva within that, because that's basically, because Lady Godiva was naked, right? So a five ball runless over is has got no clothes on it, right?
Okay.
It's got no runs on it. Right?
Okay.
So you could end up with like Finney could bowl, I mean, it'd probably only be one over, but let's imagine in an incredible world that he gets to bowl all 20 balls. You could bowl four Winstons, one Godiva, three for 18. And I think this is the way to simplify cricket. I really do.
That the 100 organisers will be delighted. Thanks for clearing that up for everybody. Now, Daniel Norcross, if you want this to be a thing, you are in a better position than anybody else on this podcast to make it so.
Well,
so
I would be.
Will you be using this terminology on TMS during the 100?
Yeah, well, I would be, were it not for the fact that essentially that they've kind of looked after the old crusty grey folk. So me, Agus and Simon are kind of, I've only done one 100 double header, and that's probably because, you know, somebody young and lovely was unavailable. And then the test matches start. So then I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk incredibly, you know, like it's the 1940s and 50s. Welcome back, Pate News. We're here, England are playing India on a splendid day in Nottingham, which has been released from the strictures of war. Rationing is gone. we'll do a bit of that. And then I've only got two more 100 gigs on the 12th to 14th during the Lord's Test. So I might come back in. I might come back in with the Lady Godiva.
He's the young, sexy new face of TMS. Any chance of you using Winston and Lady Godiva in your commentary stint there, Finney?
I wouldn't have thought so. I keep calling them overs.
Don't we all?
It is hilarious listening to the commentators and trying not to use words like overs in the 100. It's one of my favourite side things to listen to during the whole game. Right, going away from the 100, but yeah, very good point. Well, Norcross, when you do get a chance anywhere near the 100, make sure you slip that terminology in. But proper cricket, red ball cricket, Ashes cricket, it's not looking too good at the moment. There are rumours at the moment that the Ashes could either be moved to the UAE or even moved to next year, which would cause absolute chaos with the schedule. There's so much cricket already scheduled for next year. What I would say is, and the reason for this, by the way, is that Australia's COVID-19 protocols are particularly strict, some of the toughest in the world. I would say that if I was the ECB right now, I would be pushing for the move to UAE, because I think those pitches would suit the England batsmen a lot more. And certainly Hazelwood and Cummings and co will be absolutely fuming if they've got to run in and bowl on those feather beds. What do you make of it, Finney? I mean, it's a very big maybe at the moment about whether or not it will go ahead down under. But Rory Burns and the like, they'll be licking their lips at the prospect of facing Australia in the UAE rather than Perth, won't they?
I don't know. I think Nathan Lyon would be licking his lips at being able to bowl on those wickets. Depends how you look at it. But I don't know how I feel about that. It would be bizarre, wouldn't it? I mean, the series has to get played, I think, for probably the TV revenue first and foremost, but both teams will be desperate to try and win the Ashes, and however they can do that, then they will. But yeah, it'd be bizarre to see an Ashes series won by a team who has the two best spinners as opposed to the best quick bowlers and best batsmen.
Well, it happened in 1956 when Laker and Locke spun England to victory. But yes, you're absolutely right. That doesn't normally happen. But I'm telling you now, it will not happen. There is absolutely no way that Australia would relinquish a home Ashes series and have it played in the UAE. We've got a long way to go till December. There's a lot of people to be vaccinated in Australia. The problem actually is that Australia did such a good job, as did New Zealand, at combating COVID and having a kind of zero tolerance policy to it, closing their borders, that they've got incredibly few cases, actually. If you look at the total number of cases that both those countries have had, next to none. But unfortunately, they haven't had a very rapid vaccination program. So the fear is that with the Delta variant, which is starting to spread a little bit in Sydney, although Victoria was opened up again today, so that's positive. It could get out of hand really quickly because there's no natural immunity and there are very few people who are actually vaccinated. So it's a story that's born out of the fear of now. But I think having lived through 16 months of this pandemic, I think all three of us fully aware that you get shock and scare stories on a week-to-week basis and the pandemic changes direction and looks different in no time at all. So I don't think that'll happen. I do think that there is something in there, though, about the pressure on the players. If you look at the schedule that the England players are going to go through from September, suggested through till the end of January, and then, you know, with the Ashes series, and then there's a further tour, actually, of the West Indies. So when do they get to spend time with their families? I have some sympathy with that. I mean, personally, as a 52-year-old man, I can't think of anything better at Christmas than having nothing to do with my family. But, you know, these people are in their 20s and 30s. They're like soppy and wet-eyed, and they still believe in lovely concepts like love and family. And it's, I think it's fine. I think you should. I think everything happens for a reason at a time. And in their 30s, they're going to feel like that. And that is exactly as it should be. But it is a problem, and it's tough. I mean, it's why we've had all these conversations, Toby and Stephen, about, you know, who's in and out of the England team and giving people time off and mental health and what have you. It's complicated. And as fans, we can look on and go, well, don't be ridiculous, just get the bloody games on and get all the players there. But there's a lot of moving parts in team sport. You know, there's all the players in that, as we've seen, actually, with the COVID situation at Trent Rockets. You know, they've had a bit of a COVID outbreak, Andy Flower. And actually, you look at the knock-on of that. That could knock on to Joe Root. Now, it hasn't yet, because he said he's been changing in a different room from the players. But you see how precarious the whole situation is at the moment. None of us really know what's going to happen. So every story that comes up, I would just urge everybody who listens to this podcast, any story that comes up, pinch of salt. Time will tell. We have no idea. It's there's a lot of moving parts. There are too many for any of us to make predictions.
Tell you what, though, it'd be great to see, wouldn't it? UAE be Moeen Ali, Adil Rashid, called back from...
Won't happen. What about Matt Parkinson?
Matt Parkinson.
Shane Warne says you've got to pick Matt Parkinson at the Gabba, does that mean he's doing that because he thinks he's going to get flayed to all parts like Simon Kerrigan at the Oval?
Yeah.
Or does he genuinely mean it? You never know with Shane Warne, but I see what he means.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Finally, very, very quickly, lads. This week, it was the anniversary of Michael Atherton versus Alan Donald in 1998, a famous passage of play. And I rewatched it again, actually, yesterday. And you actually now sympathise for Alan Donald so much. You look at him, so he's all over Michael Atherton. Michael Atherton, he has a couple of LB shouts on him. Michael Atherton absolutely punches one through to Mark Boucher behind the stumps and doesn't walk. A shocking decision, by the way, the more you watch it from the umpire. I can't believe he's not giving it, but he's basically absolutely middled it off his glove through to Mark Boucher. He's then bowling bounces and giving Michael Atherton a few words. And then just when it couldn't get any worse, Mark Boucher then drops a huge outside edge off Mike Atherton as well. It is a fascinating, brilliant passage of play. Michael Atherton even takes on the short ball at one point and spoons it up in the air for a couple of runs. It's a wonderful passage of play. It really is. That's why we're still talking about it 20-odd years later on. I was watching Alan Donald and he's so angry. I mean, he's about to explode. It made me wonder, Finney, what is the angriest you've ever been on a cricket pitch? Have you ever completely lost your head on a cricket pitch? Have you ever had a time where you walked off almost a little bit embarrassed about how angry you got during a game?
Yeah, I think I got fired up in a game against India not a few years ago, 10 years ago now, in 2011. And for some reason, I was pretty angry that day. And I gave a couple of their batsmen big send-offs, had a couple of run-ins with them on the pitch. Suresh Raina, Virat Kohli, MS Dhoni, I think all in the same game. And then got pulled into the match referee's office after the game. And it was me, Cook, because Cook had to be there because I'd got pulled in for getting fired up. Dhoni, Raina and Kohli all stood there like five naughty schoolboys in front of the match referee, who was pointing his finger at us, telling you naughty boys, you shouldn't be swearing at each other on the pitch, buddy.
And I just sort of looked over to Coley, Rayner and Donny, and we were all just sort of giggling at each other, like trying not to make eye contact with each other. But yeah, that's the only time I ever got hauled in front of the match referee for being a naughty boy on the pitch, and I never did it again.
Can I very briefly give an unpopular opinion about Michael Atherton in that, which is that what drove Alan Donald mad, and righteously mad, was that it was the luckiest that a batsman has ever got in like 20 minutes. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Athers and I love the fact that he survived it. So speaking from a really crap batter's point of view, I can totally identify with just how he had wound up Alan Donald really badly there. But he doesn't even play those balls really well. And if Stephen Finn had been bowling at somebody who had been given not out and then dropped him and then spooned it in the air and then flinched 15 times and still the bastard was not out at the close of play, then I think you are entirely within your rights to let off the loudest possible expletive straight into the stump microphone, because Athers got so fucking jammy that day. It was unbelievable.
That's the beauty of the whole clip. We've all seen it at club level where a bowler just can't get any luck and the batsman's having it all. And it's a wonderful, wonderful video. Now, if you do get the time to go and rewatch it at some point this week, go and enjoy it because it's very entertaining. Finney, Daniel, lovely to see you both. Finney, good luck in the 100. Maybe if you win some games, I'll be a Manchester Original supporter. Maybe I'll go over to Oval Invincibles with Norcross. Who knows?
Yay.
Good luck with the rest of the games, Finney, and see you next week, chaps.
Cheers, mate.
Fellas.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Enjoy. See you,
Sports Social Podcast Network.